Hi, my name is Dr. Mark Allendary, and I'm an infectious disease specialist in New Orleans.
Hi, my name is Hope Hickerson, and I'm a health education specialist and reporter. This is the Noise Filter Podcast, where an infectious diseases physician,
that's me, and a health education expert,
that's me, talk to healthcare professionals about what you need to know about COVID-19, as well as community and public health.
For more information about Noise Filter, your public health podcast, and to watch and share our incredible informative animations, please visit us at noisefiltershow.com.
And if you like what you hear, don't forget to leave a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to us. So let's get started.
Low-income families struggle with diaper need due to pandemic shortages. Now, according to a February report from the National Diaper Bank, one in three American families have reported some level of diaper need. Some of this need may have risen due to global supply chain problems throughout the pandemic, which drove the supply down and prices up.
The U.S.'s two largest diaper manufacturers both drove their prices up. A pack of 100 diapers can now cost as much as $50.
Wow.
My gosh. The New York Times reports that even small increases in the price of diapers can be a major problem for families with infants, who usually spend around $75 for a month's supply of diapers. In some cases, these price hikes have forced parents to leave their children in used diapers or choose between diapers and other household needs. This makes me so incredibly sad.
Yeah. I could imagine, you know, and you have two younger children. Mm-hmm. And of course, without getting into your business, Hope, I don't want to do that. But I know that you were changing diapers probably as recently as a couple of years ago. So this is something that you could probably relate to.
Yes.
Were diapers that expensive? $100 for $50? That to me just seems mind-bogglingly just unbelievably expensive.
That is very expensive. No, they were not that expensive. No, I know I could get a good size box of diapers, $20-$25, depending on where you went to get them. That cost, and then having to make the choice of leaving your child in soiled diapers.
I was just about to ask you that, the thought of leaving your child in soiled diapers.
I know the struggle of, you know, your child is running around, they're playing, they don't want to stop, and you change the diaper and they got a little bit of diaper rash. Just in an hour, a child can get a diaper rash from sitting in a wet diaper. And if having to make a choice of leaving your child in a soiled diaper is so painful to me, because I know what that is, what it looks like, and what that feels like for that child. I just cannot imagine.
Even when families do have the means to get diapers, low supply means they can't always find them. Sometimes parents have to go to multiple stores to get enough diapers. Some parents have to go to diaper banks, which supply diapers to low-income families. Diaper banks and similar facilities have seen recent surges in visitors, likely due to the pandemic shortage. Diaper banks, however, typically only give parents 50 diapers, enough to last just about 2 weeks. And for some impoverished individuals, this is just not enough. This can also jeopardize children in some cases, as many daycares require guardians to supply enough diapers to last the child the entire day.
Congress is currently considering the End Diaper Need Act, which will provide funding to social service organizations that support impoverished and disabled families. And some states, like Colorado and California, have their own diaper funding programs. I know as a mom, like this, it should have happened a long time ago. The fact that we're in 2021, almost 2022, and this isn't happening, supporting families with diapers, a necessary thing for raising children, is beyond me. It infuriates me, actually. And it's exactly right, where if you have a child in daycare, they require you, majority of them require you to bring not just enough diapers for the day, but enough diapers for the week, 2 weeks, a month, because your child needs that. And parents out here struggling, having to make choices between food and diapers or leaving child in soiled diapers, is a pain as a parent that no one should have to experience.
We'll continue to follow this story as well as other stories that in which we see that structural poverty, that exists in our society leaves families having to make painful decisions that affect their family's health. And this is a focus of Noise Filter. Federal vaccine mandate loophole. At the beginning of September, the Biden administration rolled out a widespread vaccine mandate for most large businesses. However, it does not make vaccines mandatory. Unlike the federal mandate that applies to healthcare workers and federal employees, this mandate includes a provision for Americans who refuse to get the vaccine. Instead of getting the shot, they can get tested for COVID on an, at minimum, weekly basis.
While this makes the mandate more palatable to vaccine-hesitant workers, an opinion piece in The Atlantic says that the loophole shows a lack of understanding of pandemic management. This is because COVID tests and COVID vaccines were designed for very different purposes. Vaccines are intended as a protective measure, teaching the body what to do when it encounters the virus. Tests, on the other hand, are a tool for measuring something. In other words, vaccines are proactive while tests are reactive.
Now, while the mandate doesn't imply that vaccines and tests are equivalent, it does indicate that the government considers them to be adequately protective alternatives to one another. According to The Atlantic, we can't substitute vaccines for testing for the same reasons we can't substitute a seatbelt for a car's speedometer. As a measure in general, a study in clinical infectious diseases found that regular COVID screening is only effective at mitigating the spread of the virus when it's coupled with other measures like masking and physical distancing. And when a test does catch a COVID case, the onus is then on the infected person to responsibly quarantine.
According to The Atlantic, there's also a chance that weekly testing isn't a reliable interval either. People usually become contagious 4 to 6 days after becoming infected. And a lot of COVID transmission happens before someone is symptomatic at all. So a weekly testing protocol could miss the window to prevent spreading altogether. In addition to this, Americans' testing infrastructure isn't set up to sustain the volume and speed that regular testing like this could require, and even rapid tests can be delayed in some cases.
Yeah, I 100% agree with this Atlantic opinion piece. I could see why they needed an exit lane, an alternative for those that were vaccine hesitant. And, and to a certain degree, I agree with it, but I would have tightened the testing protocol to maybe like, you know, on a Monday and a Thursday, or a Monday and a Friday, or Tuesday and a Friday, or something along those lines. Because what we have seen is that with Delta, that window of contagiousness or being infectious is actually a lot tighter than the old kind of what we used to know is 4 to 6 days with the original viral strain, the wild type strain that emerged out of Wuhan, or the alpha strain as well. So it'll be interesting to see how this finally plays out over a long period of time.
Right. Thanks for listening to Noise Filter, your public health podcast.
Be sure to subscribe to the Noise Filter podcast, follow us on social media, and to leave us a review, letting us know your favorite part of the show.
You can find me, Hope Hickerson, at www.hopehickerson.com.
And you can find me at Dr. Mark Allen Derry, or at The Dr. Derry, that's D-R-D-E-R-Y.
You can follow us at Noise Filter on Instagram, Noise Filter NOLA on Twitter, and to see and share our amazing animations and to find out more information about us and the show, go to noisefiltershow.com.
Just as a reminder, COVID-19 and the human immunodeficiency virus, HIV, do share the same risk factors. We are so grateful to our sponsors, Access Health Louisiana, and to the South Central AETC. You can learn more about them at www.scaetc.org. Hope, any last words?
Yeah, stay well out there, folks, and continue taking the steps to keep yourself and your loved ones healthy. That includes exercise, a good diet, and seeing your healthcare provider regularly.
And protect yourselves and others by getting the COVID-19 vaccine, wearing a mask, and social distancing wherever possible. As an infectious diseases doctor, I also want to share with the healthcare providers in our audience that the HIV Care Tools app was recently launched by the AIDS Education and Training Center, the AETC. And it's a fantastic tool for ensuring your patients have access to the best standard of care. I encourage you all to check it out. And remember, health is a human right.